from KQED.
This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. Author Ron Hansen has tackled some of the most iconic stories of the American Old West. His novel about the murder of outlaw Jesse James was made into a movie starring Brad Pitt and Casey Affleck, and his new book is called The Kid, and in it he takes on one of the most prominent figures of Western mythology, Billy the Kid. Hansen is a professor at Santa Clara University, and he joins us now to talk about his new book, Western Mythology, and his approach to historical fiction, among many other things, I hope, in the course of the half hour. Welcome, Ron Hansen.
Thank you very much. Glad to be here.
Glad to have you. Haven't seen each other in many years.
No.
But boy, I really enjoyed The Kid. Let's talk about how you do. I mean, you got this William Henry McCarty. That's who Billy the Kid was.
Right.
Killed at 21 years old. And to separate the legendary, the mythic, and all of these stories that were rampant at the time and still exist and still endure,
sure,
from the real historical figure. What a job.
Yeah. I met a guy not too long ago who said he was reading the book, and he said he was startled by the fact that Billy wasn't a raging killer and evil and mean to people. And I think that's what history is all about, is checking out those stories, because the journalists at the time thought he was a demon.
And demonized him, yeah.
Exactly. And then only later, when people who knew him started writing their memoirs, did they realize he was actually a pleasant guy. And I thought that was an interesting new take.
This is something you found out before you approached the novel?
Yes. Yeah. I read a book called Inventing Billy the Kid by Steven Tatum, and he goes through all the newspaper accounts to show how gradually he was demonized, and then even until the 1920s, was thought to be that way until Walter Noble Burns wrote the saga of Billy the Kid, and he presented a lot of the actual interviews he had with people who knew Billy.
Well, he was just a kid, you know, like your title suggests. I mean, 21 years old, but you know, he had charm with the ladies. He was a great dancer.
Right.
He was somebody who also was kind of an escape artist. I mean, there were many things.
That's right.
That you bring out here, and abandoned by his father and his mother's death. I mean, that really give us a full dimensional character, which is mm-hmm. clearly what you wanted to do.
Right. I think of historical fiction or biographical fiction as filling in the gaps, because there's a lot that is known about him, but then there are enormous amounts of material that aren't there. So I used actually the tagline from Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, not that it matters, but most of the following is true, because I actually did pay a lot of attention to the historical account while imagining scenes, conversations that nobody had access to.
So does the historical act as a catalyst for the imagination and create even more, or does the imagination kind of take over for the historical, or do they just work in tandem with one another?
They kind of work in tandem. I kind of compare it to what Robert Frost said about writing poetry without rhyme. It's like playing tennis without a net. And I like the boundaries that history presents, and because it forces you to imagine even more.
Well, you do a great job of imagining here. I found it's one of those novels that you just learn so much from and learn more, not only about Billy the Kid and his life, but about that whole era.
Right. It was a very violent era. And I think of that, it's kind of funny that Colt called one of his pistols the peacemaker, when in fact the prevalence of firearms was actually what was causing a lot of the wars. And it was the easiest way to settle an argument. There was one person in Lincoln, where Billy was, who actually killed his daughter's fiancé because he didn't like him, and he was never brought up on murder charges.
Well, but you also got, you know, the telegraph and the railroad and all these things that are happening simultaneously, rangelands. And,
right.
I mean, you brought all that in.
Yeah.
It's not just backdrop. It's there, integral to the novel.
Exactly. It was an unfenced country. It wasn't even a state yet. It was the New Mexico Territory. And the railroad had just been brought to northern Mexico, but there was no other way to travel. In fact, no telegraph lines went to Lincoln or the areas where Billy was. So they were kind of cut off from the rest of the world, and to some extent, they felt cut off from the boundaries of the law.
We're talking with Ron Hansen, and his new book is called The Kid. It's a novel about Billy the Kid. He's also a professor at Santa Clara University and deacon at St. Joseph of Cupertino Parish. And I want to mention that because, you know, you've said actually you feel kind of a kinship with outlaws and rebels. You mentioned the Bartlebys of the world. I think a Bartleby, Melville's Bartleby, is more of a kind of catatonic than an outlaw, but that's just me maybe. But, you know, you've got this whole sense of outlaws and fascination with outlaws. And here you are, you know, this respectable deacon, good Catholic guy. How do those gel exactly?
Well, I think it's always been the stance of the artist that they stand outside of normal community. And so they feel somewhat like outlaws. That's why Truman Capote was attracted to the guys who in cold blood.
The Kansas Killers. Yeah.
Because he felt like such an outlaw in so many ways.
And so your fascination with outlaws has to do with something internal in you.
Right. And, of course, they're the best stories, too. It's in the nature of stories to have problems, and criminals always present problems.
Well, where does the Catholicism fit in this, or doesn't it? Because you've written a whole book about stigmata, for example.
Right. Yeah.
You've taken on Gerard Manley Hopkins, you know, convert
exactly.
to Catholicism.
Yeah.
So obviously a big part of your life.
Yeah, I think to be pious or to be religious is another way of being an outlaw, according to the standards of America now. I think I was attracted to people who were willing to take the bigger step to either to the side or ahead. And both the outlaws and Mariette and Gerard Manley Hopkins were some people who kind of left the bounds of their community and went into something completely different, of course, taking their own troubles with them.
Well, I've read and loved a story of yours called Wickedness. It's about a storm. Again, it's a historical piece of fiction, but actually based on a storm in Nebraska, which is where your roots are.
Yes.
Back in 1888. And what I was struck by in that story, I mean, the detail and, again, the historical resonance that it had was extraordinary. But Wickedness, I kept kind of musing on that, and I thought – it was so devastating. The storm was so devastating
right.
that you get into the questions about where does evil come from?
Exactly.
Where does wickedness come
yeah.
from? Yeah.
Yeah, there's a line in the story which says that a blizzard in Nebraska is the wickedest thing you've ever seen. And I think about that in terms of almost all natural tragedies that people want to figure out why this happened to them. And why,
or evil, too, for that matter, natural
yeah.
evil.
Why does God allow it? I mean, that was one of the questions that the philosophers have had for longest time, the idea of theodicy, that God is just letting all this evil happen. And it makes it seem like either God is evil himself or God is powerless to prevent evil.
How do you reconcile that?
I think it's just like nature, that if you swim, you can drown. If you walk into the forest, something can fall on you. And God is not going to change gravity just for you.
But the big question has always been the nature – how do you reconcile the nature of evil if a God is all merciful and
right.
all knowing?
Exactly.
Everything? How does he or she or it allow evil to exist and not intervene? And that's the odyssey.
Exactly, yeah. And I don't have the answer.
Yeah, I wrote a whole book trying to find the answer. Tina, our producer, just saw Othello in New York, and, you know, Iago, fascinated by him, but you wonder, why does he do these things?
Right.
And there's really no answer. Maybe he was jealous.
I think jealousy is probably it.
But let's talk about another book you did. You did a book about Hitler through the eyes of his niece.
Right.
Again, it's a historical book.
It is. Yeah, Gaily Rauble. And I was fascinated by her because nobody mentions her in all of the histories, but Hitler once said he was the only woman he would ever marry, but she happened to be his niece. And in fact, for the rest of his life after her death, he would spend Christmas Eve staring at her portrait, which is kind of a weird thing to do for Christmas Eve.
But then he also, he married Eva Braun, didn't he?
Yeah, but he had the Thanatos syndrome where he was only attracted to somebody when they were dead. And so it's significant that they married and then committed suicide within a day.
Again, if you've just joined us, we're talking to Ron Hansen, who's a well-established author and much admired author, and who is a treasure we have here in the Bay Area. He's professor at Santa Clara University and deacon at St. Joseph's, Cupertino Parish. Invite your calls. Some of you probably have had occasion to read some of Ron Hansen's work or have some thoughts about historical fiction, some questions for someone who has really made his mark in that genre, but also written, as I've suggested, about other areas of interest of his. And talking about some big questions here, like theodicy.
Right.
Not the Odyssey, but
no.
The Odyssey.
Exactly. Exactly. Right?
So feel free to join the program. Let me invite you to do that now. Our toll-free number is available to you. It's 866-733-6786. We do welcome your calls and welcome you becoming part of the conversation. So give us a call now. It's 866-733-6786, the number to call. You can also, of course, join us by emailing us, forum@kqed.org, or going to our website, kqed.org/forum, and simply click on the segment. You can also tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQEDForum, or go to our Facebook page. We certainly, again, welcome your involvement in the program. So you come away from reading about Billy the Kid, seeing him as a kid, as I indicated, and seeing him as a very flawed but in some ways very human character. Mm-hmm. And what do you think? You're kind of giving birth to him in a way, aren't you?
Yeah. I think what's fascinating about him is that he wasn't the biggest killer in the West, but he is remembered more than almost anybody else. I was talking to a woman from Argentina, and I said, "Do you know about Billy the Kid?" She says, "Of course." And I think that's probably true internationally, that almost everybody knows about Billy the Kid. And part of it was that he did die young, and all the legends grew up around him, but now we're kind of demythologizing the legends, at least I'm trying to.
And the number of people that he killed, I mean, compared to the legendary,
right.
The facts are just not there.
In Pat Carrot's book, he said, it was said that he killed 21 people, not counting Mexicans. And
very telling
yeah, exactly.
Phrasing.
But of course, so far we've only proven that he killed four, and two of those were when he was escaping from jail.
And what did you want to do with Jesse James? I mean, you wanted to kind of create a real man there as well, as opposed to the myth or the legend.
Right. And I was really struck by the relationship between Bob Ford and Jesse James. And it was almost like Julius Caesar or Et tu, Brute, that Jesse kind of embraced him as a friend, but then Bob turned on him essentially, mostly out of fear that he's going to be killed himself by Jesse. Jesse was paranoid. It's actually not a Western, it's a gangster novel about a guy trying to come to grips with his terrain and being paranoid about anybody he thought might attack him. And that's what Jesse was doing, was periodically going out and killing some former members of his gang because he was afraid they were going to rat him out.
Did you like the film version of your film?
Very much.
Yeah. I had that picture in my mind of, you know, Brad Pitt, the gun.
Right.
Just shooting him. And you also certainly get into the whole relationship with Pat Garrett, too, in that novel, don't you?
Yeah. Pat actually knew Billy when they used to play cards together. And then he got elected sheriff. And the people who were behind him running for sheriff were people who thought elimination of Billy the Kid was going to bring fences and roads and telegraphs and all that.
And political glory, too. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. And Pat probably resented all the attention Billy was getting, that his attractiveness to ladies, all those other things. And he was kind of a stolid sort who just was doing his job and was relentless in pursuit of anybody he thought was a criminal.
So you, in doing your job, I mean, you really pour yourself into the research of this.
Right,
and,
yeah.
And talk about that process. How does that work?
I begin by knowing something about the story. Then I read all the books about that story.
You read everything you can.
And then all the footnotes in those books lead me to other things. And then I actually did go down to New Mexico and look around Fort Sumner, which doesn't really exist anymore, but it has a lot of museums. And Lincoln is almost entirely preserved from what it was back then. And I actually had a tour with Drew Gomber, who's a Western historian, gave me a private tour of Lincoln and walking around all the places, seeing the blood on the floor, or the bullet hole, that sort of thing. That's the fun part of writing, but then you have to put it on paper.
Oh, well, you have to turn it into a narrative and have to make things linked up and all of those challenges.
Yeah.
Tell us about there's a character named Sombrero Jack I want to
right.
get you to talk about.
he was the reason, I think, that Billy the Kid was known for wearing a sombrero. He was a man a few years older than Billy, and Billy had just been orphaned. He was 14 years old, and this guy came into his life and was teaching him how to steal. And eventually Billy got caught stealing clothes, taking Sombrero Jack's stolen clothes and hiding them. But he got caught and was put in jail, and that's his first escape. He used his small stature and skinniness as a way to get out of most of the jails that they had him in.
He was a little guy, essentially.
Yeah, he was.
And very obviously wiry and everything. We're talking to Ron Hansen. His most recent novel is called The Kid. and he's also a professor at Santa Clara University. You are also a product of the Iowa Writers Workshop.
That's
we
right.
were just talking about it last week with an author we had on. But, boy, you studied under Cheever and John Irving both?
Yeah, I was actually living in John Irving's house all the time I was there. I was taking care of his two young boys. And it was a wonderful experience in that regard because I—
You didn't have to wrestle with him, did you? No.
I did wrestle with him.
Did you?
Actually, he always beat me, of course. But what was nice about it is he had a kind of a writing pattern. I followed that ever since. He would start around 8 and write until noon. Then he'd go do some kind of exercise or whatever and then come back a little bit later. And I would try and compete with him for how much time I was going to spend at my desk. And we've stayed friends ever since.
Yeah, we've had him on the program a couple of times. Did you actually take that same pattern in terms of your own writing life?
Totally. Yeah. I still write in the mornings and break for about 3 hours, then come back and write in the late afternoon and sometimes evening.
And what about the editing process? How does that work for you?
Partly it's just rereading yourself over and over again and seeing what needs amplification or what needs cutting out. I'm a careful enough writer that going over and over the material as I'm writing along, that there's not usually a lot of stuff that needs to be cut toward the end of the book. So the revision process is mostly spelling correction and making things more colorful. But to a certain extent, because I outline, I know exactly what scenes have to be written. And that still allows for imagination and character delineation, all those good things. But I don't go out on wild goose chases, which is what I used to do before I got into outlining.
How'd you stop yourself from doing that?
I realized how much time I was wasting. You know, to throw away 50 pages means several months' work. And so I don't do that anymore.
But you said you're a careful writer. And, you know, as a reader of yours, I can see that. I mean, your sensitivity to and awareness of language is, it's there in the work.
I think language is what draws you to be a writer. Love of unusual verbs and ways of putting words together, which must have been what was behind Shakespeare's success, that he just loved hearing those words put together.
So your fascination with icons, a couple of them in terms of outlaw icons and everything, anybody else now? And any women in mind?
I might go back to Mariette. Mariette Baptiste.
The Stigmata lady.
Yeah, and then follow up with what she did later in her life.
The novel was called Mariette in Ecstasy.
That's right.
So tell the listeners may not be familiar. I'm not familiar with her. Tell us.
Well, she's not a real person. She's made
a fictional
up.
Person. But yeah. Well, who is she? What is she?
She entered a convent in 1907, and her older sister was the prioress there. Her older sister dies of cancer. And shortly after that, Mariette appears to the chaplain there with bleeding from her hands and feet, which are the signs of the stigmata. Yeah. And the rest of the novel is kind of an inquiry about whether this is a real thing or whether she's just a neurotic. And, well, I can't give away the rest of it.
No, but don't give it away. But what drew you to the story? Or how did you find out about
this story? Well, I read a book about Thérèse of Lisieux, who didn't have the stigmata, but that led me to other books. Especially in France, there were a lot of women's stigmatics. And I started reading those accounts and thought about the extremes of emotion or piety that might bring those things on. And, of course, Padre Pio was famous when I was writing it.
We met many years ago with Michael Doris.
That's
and, you
right.
know, Louise Erdrich, her opening story in Love Medicine is about a stigmata.
That's right, yeah.
And it's kind of fascinating because it actually occurs.
It does.
Really does. I mean,
and they haven't been able to replicate it. They thought it might be insanity that was causing it, but they did it in insane asylums and suggested this through hypnosis, and nobody's been able to duplicate.
Well, what do you think as a man of faith and a believer in Catholicism?
I think it's a mystery.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was asked by one of the cable shows to come on and support it, and I said, you know, even though I've written about it, I'm not sure about it. And the Catholic Church has never ratified the idea that there is such a thing as a stigmata.
Well, when you think about what mind can do to body, though.
That's right.
I mean, maybe the mystery isn't as impenetrable as we think.
Right, exactly.
Things happen in the Philippines all the time.
I know.
Right?
Yeah.
With people being going through almost the paroxysms associated with the crucifixion, that sort of thing, all mentally, strangely enough. You're a twin?
Yes.
So is your twin a brother? Yeah, I mean a writer? Is he a brother? Of course, I didn't mean a Catholic brother. I mean, is he a writer?
Yeah, he's written a couple stories, but he's in real estate, really. His way of expressing the arts was more through poetry, not playwriting, and being a performer on stage.
So you both have a kind of performer or at least artistic gene of some sort.
Writing is a form of acting, I think.
Yeah. When did you decide, or how did you decide to be a writer?
It was really early in grade school sometime. I realized that I had an interest in language that other people didn't. And then I asked, we were assigned an essay, and I asked if I could do it as a short story. And the teacher somehow allowed it. And I realized I liked writing stories. And I did that all the way through high school and college, of course. And then I went to Iowa and became more professional in my approach.
Talking again, if you're just joining us, with Ron Hansen, who is an author most recently of a novel called The Kid. He's professor at Santa Clara University and deacon at St. Joseph's in Cupertino. And let me bring a caller on here. And we go to you, Steve. Welcome. You're on the air.
Hi. I'm enjoying your discussion. I haven't read any of Mr. Hansen's books, but I was just wondering if you had any comments about Stiles' book on Jesse James. I recently started reading that, and I found it very eye-opening historically.
He's a wonderful writer. Unfortunately, that book came out after I had written my book, and I'm sure my book would have been changed had I read T.J. Stiles' wonderful biography.
Okay, great. All right. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you. And by the way, you can join us at that toll-free number, 866-733-6786, or email us forum@kqed.org, or go to our website, kqed.org/forum. You've written about Atticus, too?
Yeah. That novel is actually called The House of He Who Invents Himself, which is the Mayan word for church. And my editor found it too difficult to remember the pronouns and where they belonged in the sentence. So it was a kind of an act of capitulation that I call the novel Atticus. But it's about Atticus Cody, who goes down to Mexico to recover the body of his son, who he thinks has committed suicide. And then he seems to pick up clues that indicate he was actually murdered. So he's kind of a gumshoe on his own.
This is a mystery.
It's a mystery, yeah. And it was modeled. Atticus was modeled on my grandfather, who had a ranch in eastern Colorado, and also my brother-in-law, who had oil wells in western Nebraska. And that's what Atticus does. So he's one of those guys who began as a hardscrabble rancher and ended up a wealthy man. And he was available to make his son in Mexico a trust fund baby. And so the son is down there just painting and getting into trouble before he gets killed.
Well, in a way, all your books are mysteries. I mean, Mystery of Billy the Kid. Who was he? Jesse James. Who was he? Stigmata. What is it?
Yeah. Right. I am a fan of mysteries, and I like the approach of trying to figure out what actually went on.
You want to name a mystery writer you're particularly drawn to?
I like Raymond Chandler a lot, Dashiell Hammett, P.D. James, just a lot of them out there.
Here's a listener named Robert who writes, an interesting fact that exists about a canonical event of the Old West was that the gunfight at the O.K. Corral actually took place in a vacant lot next to a photographer's studio 6 doors away from the north entrance of the corral itself and on an adjacent street corner. That's not the way it's depicted in My Darling Clementine.
No. My Darling Clementine has a lot of problems, including having Victor Mature as Doc Holliday.
They going to do a book out? Are they going to do a movie out of this book? Do you think it's natural for
somebody approached my agent about it? But you never know about Hollywood things.
I would think it would be a natural though, and you'd like to see it made into a movie.
Of course, yeah.
I mean, you've had good luck with that.
Yeah.
Let me bring another caller on here, and David joins us. David, you're on. Morning.
Hi. Hey. Good morning, Ron. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Listen, I've been hearing a lot about your outlaw book, which I feel like but one of the questions I had was spirit up the idea of an outlaw, and I'd like to hear your comments on whether or not you think Donald Trump falls into that group or if he is something different altogether. Thank you. I'll take my comment off here.
Yeah, sure. Thank you. You might want to explain a little bit what the outlaw book is about.
What do you mean by that?
No, I mean, that's a theme in your work. It's a theme,
right.
Certainly,
yeah.
As we talked about it. But he wants to, I guess, know if you see Trump as an outlaw of that kind or maybe another kind.
Yeah, I think pride is going to be Donald Trump's fall. But I think a lot of the people I've written about are people who were manipulated by circumstances. And that was surely the case with Billy the Kid. He's number one, an orphan. Number two, small. He tried to work as a cowboy, but he wasn't strong enough to keep that way. And, of course, he used the equalizer to equalize things. His first murder was a person who was trying to beat him very badly. And so Billy snuck his gun out and shot him. And then he ran off. And that's when he took on the pseudonym of William H. Bonney.
But boy, was he good with a gun, wasn't he?
He was very good with a gun. And yeah. he practiced at it, too.
Yeah.
And one of the things that he said he did in his spare time was shoot. And people always marveled at how good a shot he was. Even the guys who were with him as outlaws, they could depend on the fact that he could shoot the head off a chicken from 50 feet, you know, that kind of thing.
I love what you said about Trump, though. I mean, being more the victim of hubris than being outside of the law.
Right.
But Al Young is on the line here, and always good to hear from Al Young.
Hi, Al.
Hi, Michael. Hi, Ron. We've loved each other for decades.
Yes.
About the mystery, Paramahansa Yogananda's autobiography of a yogi has a long chapter on Therese Neumann, the German.
Oh, sure.
Yes. Have you read that?
Not his account, but I've read about Therese Neumann.
You might want to read it because he explains why it happens.
No kidding. I'll do that. Yeah.
Okay. Al, good to hear.
We've been apart too long.
I know.
Get together. Okay.
Yeah, I like that.
Well, I could say the same thing about you and me, Al. We've been apart too long.
That's absolutely correct.
Very great. Really good to hear from you. Wonderful to hear from you.
Yeah, so long, Al.
There's William who writes, how would Mr. Hansen characterize Bill O'Reilly's Killing Off the President series? Are you familiar with those?
No, I read one of his books. I think it was The Killing of Jesus or something.
Killing
like that.
Kennedy, Killing Reagan, Killing Jesus.
Yeah.
The historical thriller.
I've only read that one, The Killing Jesus, and there it has a lot of problems. And I'm really surprised he credits a person, a noted historian, for helping him out, but it doesn't seem to matter in the way he presents the stories.
Well, he doesn't claim he's a novelist. He's,
right.
I don't know what he claims he is, but what's next for you? Next subject for you?
I might do something on Mariette. I'm not sure.
That's what you said. But
yeah.
Well, good luck with that and good
Thank
luck
you.
With the kid. So good to have you with us.
Thank you, Michael. Enjoyed it.
Ron Hanson. Again, his new book, The Kid. It's a novel about Billy the Kid. We're here with you Monday through Friday, 9 to 11. An hour is repeated 10 to 11 in the evening. You can, of course, continue this or any discussion by going online, kqed.org/forum. And you can always let us know your thoughts by emailing us, forum@kqed.org. And Forum is produced by Irene Noguchi, Tina Larberg, and Judy Campbell. Our engineers are Katie McMurrin and Danny Bringer. Engagement producer, Amanda Stupai. And our senior editor is Dan Zolt. Executive producer is Joanne Wallace. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.